Weekend Breakfast with Sarah Jane King.
Saturday and Sunday, 7 to 10 a.m.
Is that from you, Vicky? Vicky says, and congrats to the Stormers for winning the United Rugby Championship. Congrats indeed. Sorry, it was remiss of me. It was the first thing I, of course, wanted to mention, but I got distracted by musical theatre. Indeed, congrats to the Stormers. They beat the Bulls 18-13 at the old Cape Town Stadium last night. Well done. Well done, the Stormers. Good. All right. Yes, it's the news review. And this morning we're joined by Graham Raubenheimer, who gives us his top three stories that are making headlines this morning. Graham, a very good morning to you, sir.
Very good morning, Sarah Jane. We haven't actually spoken over the radio before.
So we haven't.
Thank you so much for having me on.
No, this is our virgin outing, as it were. And it's delightful to it's delightful to have you. What have you got for us, Graham?
Fantastic. Very good morning to you and the listeners. Of course, just very quickly, I'd also have to just say congrats to the Stormers, because I don't know if you know, this was the very first United, they're basically the very first United Rugby Champions, beating off the Bulls, who'd really wanted this. And of course, Stormers also, you know, beating Ulster in the previous weekend. It's a huge win for them, especially because the Stormers have failed to win anything major since 2010. So that's pretty awesome in that regard. But the big story that's leading this morning, Sarah Jane, and that is this whole saga around the president's Palapala game march. It's the story dominating on almost all platforms this morning. But of course, we also know, and I think let's start off maybe on a lighter note, that there was a game auction.
Yes.
At the president's Palapala farm yesterday, that was concluded. And unfortunately, the media weren't allowed in to see what exactly went down, but they got sort of the cliff notes at the end. I mean, several livestock were auctioned off. And one of the biggest ones was a bull named Cumulus. It was auctioned off for 1.6 5 million rand at the president's farm. And of course, we know that the president, he's super into this. We're not fully sure what he personally bought or sold. He's one of 16 breeders who were there yesterday. But of course, we know that based off all the investigations that have now come into place in regards to this money that was allegedly made from the sale of game at his farm that was stolen there during the height of the pandemic 2020, we know that he keeps quite a bit of money there, at least according to the aspersions and claims by the former spy boss,
Arthur Fraser. Yeah.
So, but now, so here's the thing, right? So the Sunday Times is leading with this story this morning. So easy to rob the president, claims heist ringleader. Emanuela David says he and his partners in crime just walked in to the president's home, but they allegedly only took $800,000. How much is that? $800,000. Let's check.
Oh, you're going to have to do the calculations, Graham.
Yeah, I do this every morning. it's about 12, more than 12.5 million rand they allegedly took, and apparently security was quite lax. And then on top of the front page of the Weekend Argus this morning, they've got a slightly different angle. They're running the one that apparently the National Prosecuting Authority knew about this all along, and that they allegedly gave the Namibian police the silent treatment to frustrate their investigations into all of this. So it's going to be an interesting week. We know that the opposition parties, the DA, and the EFF, they've submitted their own requests for investigations. I mean, the pressure is really, really heating up for the president here, and he's going to have to start giving some more answers soon where the law enforcement authorities don't.
Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice. The final, we're told, Zondo report is due to be submitted today. But likelihood of that happening?
Okay, so here's the thing, right? So we know with these reports is that the electronic copy goes to the presidency first. And then thereafter, the actual, you know, ceremony where you see, the Chief Justice giving that fat, huge book over to the president at, the Union Buildings, that sort of ceremonially happens afterwards. But the thing about this report, it's the final volumes that are being released now, is that the State Country Commission failed to meet its own deadline for it to submit these volumes, and that was the 15th of June. As we know, Sarah Jane, this Commission has asked for numerous extensions from the courts over the years. It's been a hell of a long time now, and the courts on almost every occasion have said, this has to be the final extension, this has to be the final extension, because the money that it's costing you and I, the taxpayer, at the end of the day, I mean, that bill at this stage, and this is a bone of contention, at least for some of the opposition as well, is that it's over 1 billion rand spent so far on putting this all together. So we should expect over the next 48 hours that final volumes of that report to come through. What is it going to look at specifically? Well, it's going to be looking at SABC and all the affairs that went on there. We know that Claudia Motsoeneng was such a big focal point of that. And then, of course, state security matters, which we know is heavily under reconstruction at the moment under the presidency. Those are going to come with sweeping recommendations, and these final volumes, Sarah Jane, are going to hold overall recommendations, apparently, and these are going to be quite big, lofty-making recommendations that the president and his administration will have to consider going forward.
We love a commission, but we love results more. That's just my own throwing my own personal opinion. We do, as South Africans, we love a commission, but let's see some stuff actually happening. It'll be interesting to see what those recommendations are. You're taking us to the US for your final story.
Yeah, 100%. So this is quite interesting, right? Is that this is a man whose dad was basically one of the forefathers of wrestling in the world. And here Vince McMahon came along. He took over from his dad back in the day, and he basically gobbled up all the competition to make the behemoth that is today World Wrestling Entertainment. Remember, previously it was the WWF. They were forced to change that because of the Wildlife Fund. Yeah. And then creating this monster, which is the WWE. It's huge, Sarah Jane. And here we have somebody like Vince McMahon. He's good mates with Donald Trump. Goodness, he's had Donald Trump in the wrestling ring against Stone Cold Steve Austin before. And here's this.
I haven't heard that name for years. Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yeah. Sure.
So here's this man, Vince McMahon. He's huge, right? He has so much money. And for the first time, in a really, really long time, we've heard about some nefarious dealings, alleged nefarious dealings happening, in the locker room. And here we've heard about Vince McMahon allegedly having this affair with this woman, and he allegedly paid millions of dollars in terms of alleged hush money for this woman to keep quiet. And essentially now Vince McMahon has, I don't know voluntarily or not, but the PR goes that he's now stepped aside as the WWE CEO during the investigations into all of this. And then his daughter, Stephanie McMahon, who, if you may or may not know, is married to the Triple H, which is one of the biggest wrestlers ever as well. She's now stepping into the fray. But the interesting thing is that the fans actually want Triple H to be the guy.
Sure.
To take over from the whole WWE, because he's held in such high regard. We know that he was in and out of hospital, a couple of weeks ago. And, he's got heart complications. I do stand corrected. But yeah, so Stephanie's going to be taking over. But here's the thing, Vince is also going to keep his hand on the creative control of side of things. And the fans also are not too happy about that, which is also quite interesting, is because WWE has sort of waned in recent years. It's not as popular as what it once was. And there's all these other competitions coming out, AEW and these other big guys that are giving them a bit of a run for their money. So it's an interesting time for WWE. Not only are they facing this, but they're also facing a sort of perceived decline in the number of people watching. Still popular with kids, though. Still very popular with children.
I love that we're mentioning wrestling on Weekend Breakfast. He's not stone cold. He's piping hot, Graham Rabenheimer. Thanks very much indeed, Graham. Appreciate your time this morning. And from Graham to Katie, from Cape Town to Sydney, good morning, Ms. McDonald.
Ah, good afternoon.
Oh, indeed, indeed.
Yes, absolutely.
Good afternoon to you. All right, so Graham was mentioning there Stone Cold Steve Austin, which is a name that I haven't heard in a while. Another name that I haven't heard in a while, although a lot sooner than Stone Cold Steve Austin, is Julian Assange.
Well, that's interesting because he has been definitely in the press here. And it's, as you know, quite an ongoing thing. I mean, they've been trying to, well, let's go back a step. He's the WikiLeaks guy, and he well, WikiLeaks, the organization, released about 91,000 documents in 2010, secret US military reports. Well, they published the documents. They weren't the source of the leak. The US has been trying to have him extradited from Britain, where he's essentially been incarcerated for quite a few years now. And they want to charge him under the Espionage Act for publishing classified material. It's been quite a saga. It's got a lot of press, number one, because he's an Australian. So obviously it brings up this whole thing, you know, about what does the government do? How can it help Australians that are incarcerated overseas? And should they be helping Australians that are incarcerated in other countries? But also because of what so many journalists are saying, that these charges are essentially an attack on freedom of the press. Now, he's had certain appeals, rebuffed in the UK. And this week, Priti Patel approved his extradition to the United States. He's got 14 days to appeal that, and they're putting pressure here on the government and the Prime Minister to intervene with regards to that. And there are concerns about his mental health, and, yeah, look, he's had a pretty horrific time to date, because he hasn't been found guilty of anything. He hasn't been afforded bail like a lot of people who are facing charges do until they're found guilty. I mean, he's in Belmarsh prison.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's quite a
high
story.
Security.
And
yeah,
absolutely. And so there is a lot of pressure on the government to do something. What they can do, it remains to be seen. But those that are behind Assange are hoping that our relationship with the United States might be able to pave the way. You have to something, you know, release, drop of charges. I don't know. I think in America, they really want him to nail him to the proverbial wall. But yes, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks.
I love this next story. The Aboriginal flag is to now be permanently flown over Sydney Harbour Bridge. What's been the sort of impetus for this?
Yeah, in a sense, it's almost to some bizarre that it hasn't happened before, because there's been pressure on the New South Wales government to do so for quite some time. And suddenly the Premier has said, we'll do it and we'll get it done by the end of the year. And it's happening at a huge cost, which is fair enough. As he says, the cost is not a problem. It's $25 million it's going to cost to put that flag up there. You think it would just be a case of kind of hanging another flag. It's not. They've got to put up a third flag pole. These poles are 20 metres high. You could well imagine they've got to withstand a whole lot of...
$25 million? What's that? 280 million rand?
Yep, to put a flag pole on the Sydney Harbour Bridge. It's bizarre. But apparently,
I'd like to see the maths that's gone into that guesstimate. Oh, that's extraordinary.
Well, it was quite funny, because when the Premier, Dominic Perrottet, he's the New South Wales Premier, when he was interviewed about it, he kind of said that he was surprised that it would take so long and be that costly. And he mentioned that he'd go to Bunnings himself, climb up there and put the pole up. Now, Bunnings is a big hardware chain here.
Right.
But, I could picture that. But as he said, it's a unifying gesture, and it's a very small price to pay for unification.
I totally agree.
So, yeah.
I've just familiarised myself with the Aboriginal flag. Yes, I have seen that before, of course. All right. Thailand, this is interesting, for many reasons, has become the first Southeast Asian country to decriminalise cannabis. Now, bearing in mind that they have such strict drug laws, but also bearing in mind that in my youth, I probably smoked more cannabis in Thailand than I did in any other part of the world. That's not me advocating it. I was a drug addict. But it's fascinating to me, this move.
It is. It's an interesting move because they're saying that it has to be for medicinal purposes. They're allowing people to grow cannabis at home, but it's got to be a medical grade. and the products have got to contain less than 0.2% of THC, you know, that psychoactive ingredient in cannabis. It's interesting because you're right, that's been the whole thing. They have got incredibly strict drug laws. And they've been announcing that, the government will be giving away 1 million cannabis plants for free in celebration of the legalization.
Strange.
And then the thing has come out that a medicinal cannabis supply company in Thailand, they're partnering with this institute. I'm kind of like question marks here, but the Waldo Institute of Phetchaburi, which apparently is accredited by, you know, their Office of Higher Education, and they're going to offer bachelor's, master's and PhDs in cannabis science.
Wow. Listen, I'm going to be honest. I mean, my views around cannabis and cannabis use have changed a lot over the years. And I'm not going to kind of now get into them because we don't have time. But I think it's very interesting. I think it's a very interesting move, particularly for that country. You've got about a minute left to tell us about Kim Kardashian. Actually, I'm afraid I've become involved. I don't know how it's happened. After about 20 years of them doing that awful show, I've been sucked in. I've been lured in. I know. Judgment. Feel free for the judgment to come. I don't know how it happened. It just did. A cafe, I saw this yesterday on the news, a cafe in Queensland told the Paps in Australia that Kim Kardashian and her boyfriend, Pete Davidson, were at their cafe and they weren't at all. Right,
exactly. So apparently, this guy is a bit of a larrikin.
A bit of a what?
He just, a larrikin.
Right. What's that?
Yeah, that's kind of like a larrikin's a common term here for a bit of a joker.
I'm
going to
take
guy,
that.
Or not necessarily young. Yeah, larrikin.
Bit of a larrikin. All right, he's a bit of a larrikin, and then.
Yeah, and he likes to stir things up. So he actually concocted, it was quite a detailed story about Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian coming in, then having to their security detail, checking things out. They had to put their phones aside. Anyway, you can imagine how that caught on. That goes viral. A few Paps were onto the plane up to Cairns. And turns out it was a complete hoax. Kim Kardashian, yes, look, I'll be with you on that judgment train. But yeah, some very, very upset paparazzi.
What a strange thing to do. It's very larrikin-esque of him. It's that sort of behaviour you'd expect from a larrikin. Thank you very much indeed, Katie. We will chat to you on that note of Kim Kardashian and Pete Davidson. We will bid you adieu. Thank you very much indeed to Graham Raubenheimer and also Katie McDonald for this Sunday morning's news review.